we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome, welcome, our wonderful, wonderful audience. This is Dr. Peter Breggin and Ginger Ross Breggin. We're coming to you from America Out Loud Pulse. This is on America Out Loud, and we are on Thursdays at 5 p.m. And the show then goes on Apple and Google and Spotify and Pandora and iTunes and so on. And at the same time, our particular show will go on PRN.FM. Now, it also will be repeated at different times on America Out Loud. And we have wonderful people as well on Mondays and Tuesdays and Wednesdays and Fridays. Harvey Reich, retired Yale professors on Friday. We have Marilyn Singleton on Monday, a physician and a lawyer. Tuesday, practicing physicians, Jordan Vaughn and Stuart Tankersley. Wednesday, Peter McCullough comes on, and often with Malcolm, whose platform we are now on. And let me hand it over to Ginger Breggin.
Hi. Today, we decided to do a show by ourselves. And what I'm hoping we can capture a little bit is some of that interesting conversation that we always seem to get tangled up in at moments when we really should be getting ready to go to sleep. As a matter of fact, we've set rules where after a certain hour of the night, which varies a bit, we aren't allowed to bring up subjects that make the other person feel like they need to run back downstairs to their computer. That's pretty fair, isn't it, honey?
Yeah, that is. Ginger has kind of a tendency to just sort of get a little bit really excited about her thoughts around the time I'm getting kind of tired and ready to go to sleep.
Yeah.
It doesn't exactly amount to incompatibility, and it's actually kind of amusing to watch our various selves. But that's interesting. I didn't know that's what we were going to talk about tonight. And I do know we're going to talk about things that are personal, that we're concerned about in the world.
Which is the conversations we've been having.
Which is the conversations we've been having in the evening.
Yeah.
Really, all of our lives, probably for 40 years.
Right. And what I hope we're able to do, and Peter's better at this than I am, is to just relax. He relaxes, I don't, in front of the microphone, probably because of your decades of experience. And just relax and actually be a bit spontaneous about what we talk about and what comes out of it, which is often really interesting. But I promise we won't stop in the middle and run off to our computers. So the first thing, I made him laugh.
Okay.
All right. What I wanted to start with was the experience I've been having, and I commented to our lovely friend who brings us our mail twice a week today. She's been having the same experience. You go outside and the robins are there and the flowering trees are starting to bud and the flowers are starting to come up and the daffodils are high. And you look around and it's beautiful out there, like it often is in the spring. And we happen to have sunshine today, which is especially appreciated in the Northeast because it's been raining a lot this month, which is appropriate for April. And it looks like it might have a decade ago or during my childhood even. And it feels so normal. And then I remember what's happened the last 4 years. I remember that there are literally at least 2 million dead in the United States alone from the vaccine and multiple millions around the world. And I remember that we were personally infected at least twice by a bioengineered bug, at least that's what we think at this point that was, with COVID, when we came down with COVID in January of 2020, and then again last year, very seriously last year. And it's like living in a constant state of cognitive dissonance. And this increases when we connect with some of our other, with some of the other individuals in the freedom movement whom we find we have a great deal in common with. And then suddenly we discover there's this huge difference of viewpoint in one arena or another. So the biggest one, one of which we've addressed already in our columns, in our Substack, is the discussion of, is there a virus or is there not a virus? And I'm not going to go in that direction right now. But one which has been deeply disturbing to both of us is something we've been encountering recently, which is a perspective that a perspective of hate towards Israel and actually frank anti-Semitism sometimes. It's so hard. It's so hard to face. It's hard to talk about. So I'd like to ask you to jump in at this point, Peter.
Well, in a general way, there's no question anti-Semitism publicly expressed is hugely on the rise in the United States today, and that it's being condoned on college campuses throughout the country. And when there was recently a hearing at the U.S. Congress this year, the presidents of MIT, the University of Pennsylvania, and Harvard, my alma mater for my college days, and also from a year of my training, were asked questions about controlling the outbursts of anti-Semitism on the university campuses, including those three universities, with meetings in favor of Hamas and calls for extermination of Jews and other extremist positions were taken without any interference by the campus authorities or any condemnation by the campus authorities. And at these hearings, the presidents of these universities were confronted, and I happened to be watching it at the time, and they were equivocating about whether that was something that was wrong to say. Now, it was pointed out to these professors by some of the folks that any whisper of hostility toward a Muslim community would have been met instantly with rejection and by accusations from the special boards they have at the universities to make sure that everybody's being woke and isn't saying anything mean to other people while they're talking about killing Jews.
The diversity boards.
And when challenged directly, for example, and the president of Harvard was asked, should students be allowed to talk about genocide against the Jews? And she couldn't answer the question. She said, well, it depends on the circumstances. And the outraged political questioner said, the answer is never. The answer is, yes, it's genocide. It should not be allowed. And the president of Harvard was forced to resign. Some old accusations of plagiarism, which had been around for a while, which she denied, did admit to just not footnoting very well, and to the accusations of anti-Semitism at Harvard, which she was directly involved in, supposedly, you know, meeting these kinds of issues as the president, who's in charge of the ethics at the university, basically. And so she was allowed to resign, and she kept or either had a slight increase in salary to the area of $900,000 a year. She's going to teach a graduate ethics course. By the way, in my experience, is that the people who deal with ethics in medicine and psychiatry in the fields that I know are all bought by the universities.
Well, the whole ethics field is there now to find excuses and rationales for unethical things.
Yeah.
I mean, that we could go into detail on that, but that's basically
what they do.
If you examine it, that's what they do.
Now, I'd like to talk a little bit, and I want to make sure that Ginger gets to really contribute in this show today. I'm saying this to remind myself. Sometimes, as she says, she's reluctant. But we've had two experiences. Would you like to talk about them, or should I continue with it? The one experience, the most recent one, was with a man whom we greatly respect for his work, a conservative gentleman. I'm sorry, Ginger's signaling me not to talk about this.
Don't identify anybody.
I wasn't going to identify.
Oh, good. Anybody. Okay.
This happens a lot in our regular discourse during the day. I think Ginger kind of expects me to get a little out of hand now and again in public, even though I have been doing public stuff, never been accused of libel or slander in my life until Malone. Falsely accused and even made up things I hadn't said to try to get a court's attention. The court now dismissed the case, but I just don't do that. So anyway, that maybe your big anxiety about coming on the air is what your husband's going to say.
No, I don't think so.
And I hope we'll leave this in for the folks to kind of hear about what life is like on this side of the world. We love each other very, very much. And this person who also had defended us, talking about Malone, had defended us very forthrightly and correctly against Malone. And then this person comes out and says he's calling for the U.S. government to defend Iran against Israel.
I almost fell off my chair. I was so sad.
Go ahead.
That was such a shock to me to see that.
You'd invited the person on the show.
There's so much shared in terms of our perspectives, and then to see that difference of perspective was shocking. I mean, I remember Iran in the 70s having our hostages over there, and that regime has not changed. And they held our hostages for, oh God, I don't know how many days, but it was more than a year. And it was until Reagan came into office.
On that day, they released the hostages.
They released the day that Reagan came into office as the new president.
Which probably shows you they fear a conservative a lot more than an extreme progressive, which was Jimmy Carter, who was failing to accomplish anything
right
in regard to that.
Right. And Iran has killed many, many Americans in the conflict overseas, whether you agree with it or not. And the thing is, I know that it's very complicated what's going on now. It's not black and white. It's not like America's perfect.
Well, let me say, I don't think it's so not black and white. From the day Israel was announced as a valid country by a vote of the UN, which I probably, if they voted the other way, I would have still treated Israel as a free nation. But the day the UN announced it, they were attacked, Israel, on every side. And part of Israel was practically just as wide as a stone's throw. I don't remember, a couple of miles at the most. And they were in danger of being cut in two instantly. The fighting was ferocious. It was only then, I think, that Truman started sending arms to Israel. And the goal was to wipe out Israel, second Holocaust, to wipe out Israel. That has been the theme of all of the major Muslim leaders for a long time. Some of them have become more moderate recently, and some of them were actually the Saudis and the Jordanians were firing to knock down missiles from Iran.
Oh, during this recent huge attack from Iran, right.
And yet here's somebody calling for defending Iran after it sends over 300 missiles. And U.S. did. I'm a little surprised that the U.S. did, but the U.S. helped defend against the missile attack. But the big deal, to cut to the chase, is that Iran wants to destroy all the Jews in the world if they could, and they'd love to start with everybody in Israel. They are extreme in the Muslim political and religious arena. And in the Muslim world, there's no difference between politics and religion. The state is a theological state. And that's their goal. So what was this person we liked a lot thinking about? What did he not realize that if the U.S. protected Iran and not Israel, that Israel would be open to an extermination? The U.S. protecting Israel shot down a lot of those rockets coming across. And fortunately, apparently almost all of them were between Israel, the United States, Jordan, and the Arabs. Protecting Israel saved the nation from a horrible slaughter. But it would be so much worse if Iran could do what it wanted to do without fear of retaliation from the U.S., but with support from the U.S. It would be a Holocaust. Then we had another very disturbing event that I will tell you about, of the nature again, from somebody that we actually, believe me, I felt really fondly toward, a woman that I was hoping to have kind of a lunch with me and Ginger and this woman's partner on Zoom, since they couldn't possibly make it to upstate New York and we are not going to where they live. We'll take a break and resume with that and some other really personal feelings about Israel, which I have hardly begun.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Take action today. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutLoud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
I'm so confused. I don't know what to do.
I'm afraid of going to the hospital.
My doctor tells me nutrition doesn't work.
Trust is earned. We are the Energetic Health Institute, and we want to earn your trust. Natural medicine, holistic nutrition, detoxification, fasting, cellular healing, and so much more. Remember, the best way to be free is to be healthy. So stop being a patient and start being a student at energetichealthinstitute.org.
Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of death and disability. Today's high-stress, on-the-go lifestyle makes it hard to stay heart healthy. Lifestyle changes like exercise and diet are critical, but you can also support your heart with concentrated nutrients. Healthy Cell created Heart and Vascular Health to support three aspects of heart health: cholesterol, blood pressure, and triglycerides, with CoQ10, vitamin K2, resveratrol, and soluble fiber. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 13 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great-tasting gels come in a small packet. Tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. Get heart healthy. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
A lot of the rage, before I talk about this friend, a lot of the rage at Israel right now is saying things like, oh, and this is what this person put up on her Substack, I think, was that the only real global threat are the Jews. That's this age-old thing. And Hamas working with the United States Secret Services, the various services, and working with Donald Trump were the global threat.
Israel, not Hamas.
No, I'm sorry, Israel. Yeah, Israel, not Hamas.
Right.
Were the global threat. Now, Actually, the globalists want to destroy Trump because they're anti-globalists. They want to destroy Jews and Israel because they are likely at some point to stand up against globalism, because if they start remembering that they're supposed to be here bringing God to the world, they're going to remember that they have to be anti-globalists. So this and this person then put up the, I don't even like to think of the name, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. She put up the picture of Hitler's favorite book next to Mein Kampf. Hitler's regime published these false documents claiming to be Jewish elders producing these documents, which are about things like, you know, killing Christians on the holidays, Christian babies, and doing things with their blood. I mean, I won't even discuss it anymore. It's disgusting. It is not Judaism. It's clearly from certain origins in Russia and France that have nothing to do with Judaism, weren't even about Jews to begin with. This book did more to justify the slaughter of Jews in the Holocaust than any other book other than perhaps the Mein Kampf.
It still does, and apparently.
It's still motivating these people, which is just bizarre. A person we thought was a loving human being. So anti-Semitism is beginning to be expressed now in very fearful ways. Now, let me say this about Israel. Israel is a nation whose forefathers said you should not have kings. I think they also meant premiers running the nation, that it should remain being run by the various judges and the teachers and the communities and not by a unified force of power. But nobody listens to the prophets very well in the Bible, and they went ahead and they set themselves up with kings. Everywhere in the world today, the leaders of nations are corrupt. I used to love the current premier. He's kind of
Netanyahu,
kind of built like me, looks a little like me. He's probably an Eastern European Jew like me. And people used to say he talks like me and his forthrightness and directness. And I used to be very proud of that, to be like him. I think he's a corrupt globalist. But that's true in every nation of the world today of any account. Mm-hmm. They're all corrupt globalists. And in every nation of the world, their secret departments, whether it's a CIA or an MI6 or whatever it is, it's Mossad, are all corrupt, working for the corrupt leadership toward globalism of some kind. That's a fact. Now, I don't call for the extermination of the North Koreans because of their leader. I don't call for the exterminations of the Chinese because Xi Jinping is a global murderer, maybe the worst of them all. Actually, I have a certain amount of contact through being near Cornell. I don't work with Cornell, their globalist nightmare. But I get to see Chinese students. I'm particularly fond of them. They're very, very kind, gentle human beings. And many of them, a number of them are Christians. So, you know, I don't want to harm any people because of their leadership. So what is this business that we have to go ahead with the extermination of the Jews because they're being stupid? They nearly exterminated themselves and taken these darn being leaders and taking the vaccines. This is a craziness. It's certainly just Jew hatred, which has a very, very long history. Probably because God calls us the chosen people. But what did he choose us for? He chose us to hold us to a standard where we either obeyed him or he did a sin. I mean, that's actually in the Old Testament. He used to say he loves us, but he doesn't respect us. We're just a nobody, trashy people that he loved. And he's given us this task to bring the Ten Commandments and God to the world. And he's holding us to this very, very horrible standard of how we're supposed to behave and so on. That's what's in the Old Testament. There's nothing to be happy about, but maybe to be proud about. I'm not sure. It's very tribal. It's going to lift this tribe up and in some global way, interestingly enough. Maybe it's because we are a culture that has maintained its own identity longer probably than anyone. I'm not saying it's longer than the Chinese or longer than the Egyptians, but the specific cultural elements of being a believing Jew are ancient, the oldest there is of a surviving people, certainly the oldest of a surviving people who didn't have their nation back. Remember, they were driven out of their nation first by the Babylonians and then by the Romans, and forever part of Judaism is the promise next year in Jerusalem, and after the war destroyed 6 million, some of the leadership decided only thing we can do is save ourselves. Now we can't trust any nation. Germany was the most advanced civilized nation imaginable before Hitler took over.
Well, you know, Peter, the Jews love their nation and Israel as much as I think any peoples loves their nation. And the concept of loving one's nation and having a national identity is completely counter to the goal of the globalists, which is to wipe out all national boundaries and to denationalize every people in the world. And I think that that Israelis love Israel much more than Americans love America. And it's gotten worse in terms of Americans loving America, because we've been so propagandized for 50 years against the greatness and the uniqueness and the specialness of our country. But I think that that's one of the major reasons that, in addition to this underlying sort of fundamental hatred that keeps bubbling up, that Israel as a country is under attack now.
Yeah.
It also serves to vastly disrupt and chop up in movements like our freedom movement, if you can call it that. But those of us who embrace freedom, for us to bump into some members who are concerned about health freedom and freedom in general and America, for them to suddenly become anti-Semitic in their support of the enemies of Israel and not to recognize Israel's right to exist as a country and to come up with some other kind of solution to the conflicts over there. I know that it was shocking what happened on October the 7th when the Israeli boundaries were pierced and Israelis were attacked and horribly, horribly tortured, and with thousands kidnapped and horrible things that occurred with them. I didn't even want to read about everything that happened. So there has been a question about, well, why was the boundary so porous at that moment? That's a fine question, but that doesn't mean that Israel as a whole should be condemned. Again, we're talking about the Israeli leadership that is perhaps at least as compromised as our own leadership and our own administration at this point in time. That doesn't mean that you make a judgment against all of America or all of Israel.
Well, I think that's a very, very, very important point. And you and I were among the first to say, did Netanyahu let this happen?
Right.
What is going on here? But really, it doesn't matter in many ways, because that's what Hamas wants to do. And if Netanyahu is evil enough, and I don't know the answer, to have allowed that to happen for his own political purposes, nonetheless, that's what Hamas wanted to do. And that's what they've been trying to do, shooting hundreds of rockets into Israel every year, working with Iran. And also, by the way, the leader of the attack, the actual leader of the Hamas attack, was married to a Chinese woman. They both have close ties to China, the communist China. So this is part of the world global violence. And of course, Israel's been exposed to threats of extermination constantly throughout its existence. So even if Netanyahu said, okay, I'm going to allow a big one so we can finally invade and just take over from the poor souls in Gaza, I think is a huge mistake for any large number of deaths he's causing. That has not been the style of the army of Israel. I don't know whether it's a style now. It's hard to get accurate news out. But what would we do if our nearest neighbor, say Mexico, was constantly threatening to exterminate us, working with Canada, on both borders, just as Israel has, constantly threatening to exterminate us, was shooting hundreds on a regular basis of bombs, some of which do land, some of which do kill lots of people. What would we do if they finally did a major excursion, killed, I hate to even think of the number, what was well over 1,000.
I don't know.
And took hundreds of hostages, murdered children in front of their parents, and on and on. What would we do? Would we finally put to rest the ability of Mexico and Canada to attack us? That's the position the Israelis are in. And the hatred is palpable, directed against them. So, folks, you know, let's get real and look at the issue of the anti-Semitism. All the governments are corrupt. The Quran is very, very oriented toward the murder of Jews and to Christians, in many passages of it, considers us, you know, to be people who should submit to Islam or the sword, one or the other. Now, of course, the Old Testament has a lot of junk in it, too, that I think. But that's not what the operating plan is of Israel. It has never been. It's been self-defense. It's been self-defense. And the operating of Iran and has not been self-defense. It's been fulfill the dream of, you know, of taking over the world. We'll start with the Middle East and we'll get rid of the Jews in the Middle East. This is no exaggeration. Ginge, you want to pick up on? I like your thoughts about, you had some thoughts you shared with me about property and national boundaries. I thought were very interesting. Today.
Well, it was someone's Substack I read, and I don't remember who at this point in time, but there was a recent Substack, which I'll need to dig up. And what this author said was, he said that in the, I think it's 75 years that Israel has existed, this two-nation concept that has been attempted, where you have a nation for Palestine, for Palestinians, and you have a nation for Israel, just has not come about. It hasn't worked. And in fact, it's been sabotaged. Now, this is me. It's been sabotaged at every corner by many, many of the Arab states surrounding Israel, as well as the Palestinians themselves, or at least their leadership.
Their leadership.
I feel, and I think we both do, that the Palestinians are a victim group who have been massively used and abused by their leadership and by the Arab nations around them, the other Semitic.
Yeah, they put their military beneath the hospitals and tunnels. They even use their mosques.
Right.
Because they think that'll look terrible to the
and world. Civilian shields, which is like putting the military below the hospitals, using civilian shields however they can, which means you put the civilians in front of your military to try and prevent your military from being attacked, and the civilians are the ones that get killed. So the Palestinians are a group that really could use a break. But that's not going to...
They're held hostage in Gaza. They can't even go to Egypt, for God's sakes.
Mm-hmm.
They can't, for, since the beginning, the Arab state said, we won't integrate you. Meanwhile, the Jewish state is saying, we'll take Jews from everywhere in the world. We'll make it work. We can do it. And the Arab states are saying, we can't take all these refugees. Mm-hmm. And why would they do that? They're big enough to easily integrate these groups. They keep them there to keep it inflamed with Israel.
Right.
They're still not letting them leave.
Right. 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 So the column that I read proposed there should be a separate nation established for Palestine, not within Israel's borders, but there should be some establishment of a separate nation, and they, Palestinians, should be reimbursed in some way and assisted to migrate into their own country and their own nation, which of course is so anti-globalist that the globalists would hate that. And they would do everything they could to try and prevent that. The globalists do not want a happy ending, folks. They want Israel and the Palestinians and the Arab states to look like such a horrendous mess that the only solution is to knock down national borders everywhere and globalize the entire world. And they really want things to get to the point. We beg them to do that. And with that, we need to take a break.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Don't accept joint aches and stiffness as part of aging. Doctors at Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexibility. And Healthy Cell's not a pill, it's a gel you swallow. Get 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com. Code out loud.
World-class care from doctors you can trust, all from the comfort of your home. That is One Wellness. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company launched the One Wellness membership to provide free monthly supplements and unlimited telemedicine access with doctors that share your values. Be a part of a revolutionary new healthcare system that puts your health and well-being above the interests of Big Pharma's bottom line. It's the way healthcare should be. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first month of One Wellness.
ASEA believes that inside each of us is the potential to feel our very best. Our redox-based products tap into reserves within you to power your personal well-being. Make our breakthrough products an essential step in fulfilling your greatest potential. ASEA, we power potential. For exclusive savings, use code OUTLOUD to save 15% off your first order today.
And we're back. Hi, folks. This is
our wonderful, wonderful audience.
Yes. Hi, our wonderful, wonderful audience. This is our third segment, and I'm going to toss it back to Peter.
One of the things, if we get above the issue of Jews and Muslims fighting, and Muslims trying to destroy Israel, this is all in the interest of globalism, period. Because if almost all problems can be understood if you just look to what do the globalists want. I'll give you first the example of Ukraine. Why is that going on? Why did the global banks join NATO and the United States in attacking Russia? Why did, for the first time in history, did the global banks experiment with could they turn a war in a large-scale way in the particular manner of siding with one side or the other? Usually they stay neutral. They want to make money on both sides. And the International Monetary Fund stepped in to help Ukraine and the World Bank and so on. The central banks did. So what is that about? It's not about the Ukraine. It's the desire to destroy Russia as a nation that stands outside globalism. It's not that Putin is a wonderful man. He's a horrible graduate of one of the worst academies in the world.
The KGB.
Yes, the secret police, the KGB, of Russia. But he's a nationalist. He's a powerful Russian-loving nationalist, which is not what a globalist is. And so he is standing up as this glaring thorn in the sides of NATO and the European Union, which are very globalist and which want to destroy all powerful nations. That's what's happening in the U.S., folks. Anything you think is crazy going on in the U.S., makes no sense. The border open, the cities deteriorating, the once great energy independence destroyed, the fraudulent elections.
Our oil reserves emptied.
And all this stuff. It's explainable if Biden is a globalist. Actually, he's a globalist criminal. He and his family are tens of millions of dollars rich from working with Xi Jinping, who is probably the most powerful globalist in the world. So everything can be explained if you just all the deterioration, not the good things, can be explained by the making of a global empire. Now, they don't want the U.S. in that empire. We acted like an empire for a long time, folks, and it was not a part of America First, really. It was not a part of the founding principles of the founders of this country. It was actually a movement toward the eventual global empire, the U.S. policing the world and so on. So I'm not favoring that empire either. So you end up with a situation in which there's an Eastern and a Western empire. The Eastern is Xi Jinping. He's got all of this stuff going on. We describe this in our book, COVID-19, The Global Predators. Then you got the Western Empire, and that's, Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab and all these villains, but they're tied in with NATO, and both sides are tied in with the World Health Organization, the UN, vying for control of it. They don't want the Muslims involved in this, because the Muslims are their own empire buildings. They're one of the most numerous peoples and the fastest growing peoples in the world. And they have an independent religion, which is globalist itself. It is not going to want to join and share the world with Xi Jinping or Bill Gates or Klaus Schwab or the head of NATO or some other.
Or any other.
Or the big banks or anybody else.
Or any other religions.
And by the way, we have a new book soon coming out, and I've been working on banking. I've got two chapters on banking in it. I don't see a lot about the Rothschilds controlling modern banking. Again, that's a part of anti-Semitism. The Rothschilds were very powerful bankers, and they're still there. But when you think about it, it's not because Jews are money-loving that we would end up having some very powerful bankers. It's because neither the Muslims nor the Christians were very eager to do money and to collect, you know, rent on the money in terms of interest. The Jews stepped into the vacuum because the Jews were not allowed to own property. The Jews, they were in the diaspora. They weren't allowed to own guns. They lived in most of them, the mass majority, in poor villages. And it was natural as an outlet for them to be lending money. And you can be sure that the Christian empire and the Muslim empire, they were using the Jews, and the rich Jews were using them. Collaborative effort, as always is. And yes, the Rothschilds were interested in the Rothschilds. They weren't interested in Great Britain. They weren't interested in any particular group of people. They weren't out there defending the Jews during the Holocaust. They were like any other globalists. They all want their own circle of power. They want glory. They want to control things. And so they're happy to see the Jews and the Muslims killing each other. The globalists are delighted with it.
I go back to when I was a child and thinking about, I learned about the Holocaust in grade school and in junior high. And by the time I was a teenager, I was reading a number of books in the 60s, which had to do, Exodus came out in the 60s.
Yeah. Yeah.
The book did, the novel, and the movie came out a bit later, I believe. And it was one of the two subjects that interested me the most, the other one being medicine and epidemiology.
You were being set up to be the wife of a Jewish doctor.
I think so. A particular one. And I actually, at one point where I was in a personal crisis trying to decide what I should do, since I wasn't sure that I could handle academic life, and I was 18, I had to make a decision. I was thinking that I had to make a decision between going to Israel and joining a kibbutz or getting married.
Did I know this?
I told you that, I think.
When, do you know?
I've told you that before.
Okay.
I think so. You don't remember.
I don't know.
A life would have been very different.
Sure confirms that we were kind of meant to do the same thing together.
I'm not sure that you and I would have met, but maybe we would have. And thank God.
I was thinking about, you know, during the 68 would have been... One of the wars, I was in the U.S. Public Health Service, and I couldn't leave and go fight. But I was thinking about, well, should I do that?
Well, and this was in 69.
Yeah.
That I was thinking about that in 1970. So, wow, it's amazing where God's hand directs us. I've often felt that without God's interference or intervention, that Peter and I would never have met, because it was such a series of coincidences and repetitive things that brought us together. So I'm very grateful that we're together.
And, amen.
And I'm grateful that we've had the life path that we have. I think that we've been able to contribute a lot from our station in life here in the United States. And I've been very, very thankful that we've been in this country, and that up until more recently, we've had such a degree of freedom of speech and so forth. I've always been very aware of that.
Yeah.
From even before you and I were together.
Well, just to carry this a little further, what my own thinking is with, we didn't know we were going to spend the whole show on anti-Semitism.
I kind of figured we would.
Okay. I didn't know. And what's on my mind always is I've had the knowledge since I was a child that it could happen here. I just knew that. For those of you who think the Holocaust never happened, I first learned about it when I was 9 years old, sitting in a movie theater with my parents to watch a family movie, and first came on Movie Tone News, and they would give world news reports, U.S. and world news reports. And the first motion pictures taken by soldiers, U.S. soldiers, came out of Germany. And I don't even know what concentration camp, extermination camp it was, but these were pictures of Jews dead in piles, pictures of Jews hanging on barbed wire like they were skinny birds, barely able to hold themselves up. And they had pictures of the city, the mayor of the city, being led around by the soldiers to see, and then some of their cohorts. I think they took the village through and said, look at what's going on here, witness this. And then later, my Uncle Dutch, within a year probably, came back. He'd been on the edge, fighting edge of the front, coming from Great Britain, from the landings. And he liberated a camp himself. And my Uncle Dutch was not a character I admire for a number of reasons. But my uncle, this is one of them, my Uncle Dutch showed me pictures of the torture chamber. I'm 9 going on 10 at a camp that he had liberated. There was no fighting around the camps. They were mostly trying to cover it up before they left, as far as I know, kind of indicating they knew they were in serious trouble for the camps. They would do anything, try to cover up at the last minute. But that emblazoned on my memory the reality of what could happen to Jews. And I remember then thinking, could that happen to the first girl that I started to care about when I was a little older? And what could happen? And I decided, I can't tell you why, I decided that I would fight, that I would rather die, I would rather have a gun and die than submit to anything like this. And I would not be hanging on a wire or splaying in a pile. I thought I saw one of the people in the pile moving. I mean, it was really an awful experience watching this. My parents were unable to talk to me about it. And
I'm so sorry, Peter.
But it's the making of who we are, you know. Mm-hmm. So, folks, this is very real stuff. And I don't want to imagine there's a single anti-Semite listening to this show. But if there's somebody who's just thinking to themselves, you know, all they did was show a book or something on the air, this is all about the slaughter of Jews. That's what it is. That's what the protocols are about. It's about making the Jews look so evil, that they can be slaughtered. Know what you're doing, at least, when you voice your anti-Semitism. And ask yourself, am I a loving human being that I can voice anti-Semitism? And if you know people dear to you and you're willing to do something, say to them, look, this leads to mass murder. That's what this is about, anti-Semitism. It's about mass murder. It just happened not long ago. There are still survivors alive. I personally know a survivor who's active in the health freedom movement. And let them know that what they are advocating is exactly what the Hamas people were advocating at Harvard, and the president was allowing to advocate, kill Jews. Let them know. I'm not talking about calling them out publicly. I'm not calling out these people publicly. I've been wondering about it, but I'm not going to do it. I don't think it's what I'm here for. They're calling themselves out publicly,
right?
Which is what one very, very religious Jew I inquired of about, you know, calling out people. And actually that's in the only other place I've talked about this that I know of. That's in the blog by Zev.
No, it wasn't the Zevin.
Oh, no, it's the Lowell interview. Now, are we going to get that up?
I don't know, Pete.
Okay, we don't know whether we can get it up, but we'll try to get up an interview where I was talking with Frank Zelenko, who was a part of the interview structure, and he's the son, I'm sorry, the younger brother of Zev Zelenko, one of our heroes, is gone. And Frank was saying, no, no, just be more of a Jew, be more of a freedom fighter. They call themselves out. Don't draw attention necessarily.
It's true. They do label themselves.
Yeah. So that's a lot of my thinking. We have about 2 minutes left. It's very impromptu. I would, Ginger, we don't do these shows. We're going to do more of them, I think, because I think we are. I tell you what.
I only laugh. It's hard to do these.
Yeah. When this show goes up on our Substack, there you can comment. Let us know whether you want us doing more shows. Some of them will be happy and full of laughter because, you know, Ginger and I are that way, actually. just let us know if you want to hear more from us, and maybe once a month or something, instead of always having interviewing people. I would like to get used to really sharing more of ourselves with people, but let us know what you think. And if you've got anti-Semitic remarks to throw in, we will just simply, you know, block you. We're dealing with that now, folks. That's happening now. We have a series of basic thoughts, which we call the primary principles. And the first one is to fight for freedom. And the third one, as I remember, is to, the second one's to be responsible at all times. Third one is to give thanks at all times. And the fourth one is to be a source of love, become a source of love. The primary principles, defend liberty, be responsible at all times, give thanks and appreciation at all times to the Maker, become your a source of love, which you can do because you all have God in you. Love and God very, very closely connected in our lives. God bless us all, and thank you for being a wonderful audience and taking what we say so seriously.